This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 7th, 2011. I'm Caleb Brown. The attacks of September 11th, 2001 altered the direction of the U.S. military, spurring interventions in several parts of the globe. 10 years later, have we learned the right lessons from those interventions? Chris Preble, Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, comments.
It's hard to imagine in the immediate aftermath of 9/11 a response very different from the one that we saw by the Bush administration. I think President Bush himself deserves, frankly, a lot of credit for setting the tone in the immediate aftermath of the attacks. We'll recall that he went out of his way to advise people not to turn this into a question of identity, not a clash of civilizations, not a war of Islam against other religions and other peoples. And I think that's to his great credit. He even was criticized for that at the time. And I think that, you know, the most important foreign policy initiative immediately after 9/11 was obviously the invasion of Afghanistan, which frankly wasn't an invasion at all. It was a targeted operation to depose the Taliban government that had sheltered al-Qaeda. Most Americans, most people around the world found that to be a proportionate response. I think that was correct. But then we have to look at the whole range of other foreign policy actions that were taken beyond the war in Afghanistan, most of them done under the cover of counterterrorism or using the context that was established by post 9/11 to a more permissive attitude within the American public in favor of the use of force than would have existed prior to 9/11. I think obviously the most obvious and dramatic case of that was the war in Iraq. But there have been other military interventions that have also moved forward that seemed to me would have been completely impossible prior to 9/11, like the expanded use of, frankly, the technology that we didn't even have in our possession, that is, you know, unmanned aerial vehicles and particularly the arming of those vehicles, not just for surveillance, but actual for targeted killings. That was dramatically expanded after 9/11. We've seen that even very recently in Yemen, in Somalia, and obviously in parts of Pakistan as well as Afghanistan. You know, it's hard to disentangle a lot of – when we talk about foreign policy, it's hard to disentangle completely from domestic counterterrorism, domestic security, homeland security. That's a separate discussion. You know, I try to – focus on foreign policy, but also have talked about counterterrorism in my years here at Cato. And I think that one of the themes that we emphasize where there is a linkage is that when you talk about a reaction or a prudential reaction to terrorism, when you talk about targeting terrorists, would-be terrorists, you talk about disrupting their plans of operations, the most extreme sort of action is war. And it's also the kind of overreaction that can elicit a response or create a backlash that in itself is a driver of terrorism. That's not to say that all American wars are contributing to that problem, but when you contemplate putting large numbers of U.S. troops on foreign soil, you have to anticipate that there will be some resistance and that some of that resistance will be violent.
In 2008... 4 years ago, even this idea of backlash seemed sort of out there to a lot of mainstream Republicans. Where did we stand now?
There is clearly a great reluctance to engage in any kind of soul searching or introspection on the part of really any major political figure. It seems to be particularly pronounced in the Republican side. We hear instead an invocation about American exceptionalism and kind of implying that there's no reason whatsoever why the United States would question its foreign policy goals, its motives, or the conduct of that policy. And to do so and to in any way suggest that there is some linkage to terrorism and acts of violence against Americans, to suggest any linkage whatsoever between that and our foreign policy for most Republican presidential candidates and presumably a number of from many primary and caucus goers, that's just a bridge too far. But I think that from a very kind of nationalistic and just commonsensical point of view, people recognize that when the United States engages in foreign military operations, it is nearly inevitable that there will be some kind of a backlash. And then the question is the risk of that backlash offset greatly by the benefit that we derive from it? And in a few cases, the answer is probably yes. But in other cases, I think, especially looking back over the last 10 years, I think we can say with some confidence that no, knowing what we know now, we would not do that again. And I think Iraq is clearly at the top of that list.
Is having been at war for a decade, does that create a sort of a skepticism for the next 20 years for among members of the public that this is something maybe we need to slow down and think about?
Well, there is a skepticism, and there's a pattern in American foreign policy over, frankly, throughout our history, where we go from a very kind of a confidence in our ability to succeed and prosper without becoming entangled in other people's disputes, all the way, and then the pendulum swings to where we become so confident in ourselves and our abilities and our wisdom that we believe that by intervening in other people's affairs we can create a better future. I think clearly the pendulum has swung back in the other direction, but that has not stopped the Obama administration from intervening in Libya. It has not stopped talk of military operations in Iran or Syria or Burma or countless other places where liberty is under assault. And I think there's this constant tension between a confidence in our ability to prevail, even if the rest of the world is still not fully liberal, that is fully, free, and our overconfidence in our ability to shape that end. And I think we're kind of somewhere in the middle in the terms of the pendulum swing right now. There's a greater resistance or reluctance or skepticism about military intervention, but not sufficiently strong to stop all intervention in the future.
This particular war weariness that came about, even in 2004 for the Iraq War, has dovetailed with fiscal constraints that have apparently snuck up on us, but really haven't. What role should that play? I mean, we've talked before about Tea Partiers, who are now a major force in at least the U.S. House, and how these fiscal constraints might actually change their rhetoric about how we conduct ourselves around the world.
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, I think there is an incompatibility between believing in limited government at home and expansive government abroad. That's been the classical liberal tradition going back for, frankly, generations, the skepticism of that. But in terms of in contemporary context, the fact that we're broke, frankly, we're worse than broke, that we're badly indebted, it is not a surprise. It should not come as a shock to anyone. This is something that has been building for a very long time. And yet, the vast sums of money that we spend on our military, to the extent that those are not essential to our own security, opens the way for a rethinking of not just what we spend, but why we spend it. And so I think we see some energy behind a reorientation or at least a modification of U.S. foreign policy driven by the fiscal constraints, even if it's incorrect that the fiscal crisis was caused by the wars. It was not. It was merely exacerbated by the wars. That's sufficient, though, to cause people to rethink the ends and means of our foreign policy.
Chris Preble is Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Read more of his work at cato.org.